It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
All right, Vegas, before we get into this very special episode, we got to thank our daddies of the pod, especially this week, and you will see why. We got to thank Kayla, Robin, Jordan Texera, Jay Lingle, Spencer Grieve, Javier Mera, Sheila Valeri, Chandler, Luana Galbano, Ali Santana, Carla Huarlo, Kimberly Whalen, Alonso of My Face 69, Donya Zanad, Jimmy, Kimmy, sponsored by Mommy of the Pod, Hollister 584, Live Lot, Cat, Future Dog Tour Dion, Steph Grossi, JB Fresh, Laura, Emily Gillenwater, Cody Hull is my F1 daddy, Branch W, Keep Up the Signs Hate, we gotcha, Hunter Scruggs, Salmonella, Mozzarella, I'm a LeClaire fan, and yes, it hurt, Jay Kess, and our two newest daddies, Sigmalonso for president, and George Russell is evil Peter Parker from Spider-Man 3. And last but not least, the daddy himself, the daddy on the pod this week, Mohammed Patel. Thank you, daddies.
What's up, Vangas?
Hello, Vangas.
How is everybody doing?
How are you doing? I'm so excited,
man. I'm so excited for this.
I just can't hide it. You know why? Because it's bring your children to work day. It's not bring your children to work day. It's bring your dad to school day. That's really what it is. It's what do they call that? Career day?
It's career day.
It's career day.
Yes.
We have a listen, we talk about the daddies of the pod, yeah. Right? We talk about the daddies of the pod, what it means to be a daddy. What it really means to be a daddy is that you get to fucking, like, if you're cool, be on the podcast, because that's what's happening today.
This is low-key just an advertisement for the Patreon.
Yeah, but, Today, we have Daddy Mohammed Patel, who is a environmental engineer who works in environmental policy for a larger corporate conglomerate or something. He will explain
that's what he
better.
Does to put food on the table
that's
for
what
his
does to put,
children.
That's right, for us. And and today you're all sitting in class and you're going to learn what our daddy does for work.
And, as it relates to F1.
As it relates to F1. And so we are very thrilled to have Daddy Mohammed on the pod.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be here. And also to all the people on the fence about the Patreon, you know, it's pay to play. Like, give some money and you can do whatever you want. So
wait, I probably butchered kind of a vibe of what you do. So can you explain to the people what you do and what we're going to be doing today?
Okay. Yeah, 100%. So no, you got it a lot of it right. I have an environmental engineering degree, but currently I work in climate policy, specifically transportation climate policy in the U.S., mainly regionally based in Chicago. Shout out Chicago. And I work mainly on like clean vehicles, clean fuels, and like overall governance and sustainability, and how do we transition from a very high intensity carbon economy to something that's a bit cleaner, a bit better for everybody's health, and better for the environment. So today we have a lot of stuff on the table, but it's like we're going to go through the F1 plan, hopefully get on some common understanding of what is sustainability, like these buzzwords that we hear all the time, net zero, greenhouse gases, you know, biofuels. What are all these things that you're hearing and you just, you know,
yeah,
what is that and what does it actually mean? And maybe, I don't know, talk a little shit.
Well, but you do hear this a lot, right? You hear net zero by 2030, right? And you hear that carbon neutral by 2030, right? Is that, and you hear this a lot, like in the larger, you know,
yeah,
lots of commercials.
It's
bandied about. It's kind of, you know, it's one of these check marks that it seems like a lot of companies like are dying to have. Like, we're carbon neutral, okay? We're just carbon neutral,
yeah,
okay? We're not bad. We're not good. We're neutral. What do these terms mean? And why is it important for like larger companies to like have this check mark next to them?
Yeah, 100%. I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Everybody's using it. You have, how many pictures have you seen of like a huge swath of forest with like a Mercedes-Benz right in front of it, you know? It's the same formula. So
you're like, if this isn't Mercedes-Benz, it's basically a tree. Yeah.
Exactly. So there are a couple of those terms, right? So we can start off with net zero, right? So net zero means that the amount of greenhouse gases that you're emitting is equal to the amount that you're taking out of the atmosphere, right? And it's important because much of our planning around climate change is this idea of how do we reduce emissions and keep global warming under 1.5 degrees Celsius? And what a lot of that looks like from an economic perspective is reducing your carbon emissions, and balancing it out with, you know, how much trees are taking out of the atmosphere, like what coral reefs are doing and things like that, right? So it's carbon accounting for the most part. And it's a fancy little trick to say that like we're doing something, but it's a bit of a black box, and understanding where these things coming from is really important.
Now, this is what my dumb brain knows, like one thing about this, and you can tell me whether this is true or not. It's like when you say like, you know, the amount of CO2 that we're emitting versus taking out of the atmosphere. Doesn't this happen a lot of times where companies, it's like that they just buy like buybacks from other companies?
Yeah. Exactly. And a huge part of this is that, right, if we're talking about an accounting tool, so what does that lead to? It creates a market where you can buy and trade these things, right? Exactly. So 100%, right? Like,
how do the buybacks work?
So that carbon credits, right? And that's a great thing to think of next. And I think net zero is important to understand, but if you're interested in climate and you're interested in like actually making a difference, you have to look at just the positive carbon emissions that are being done, right? Like in the overall accounting of what we need to limit, we're going to need to pull carbon out of the atmosphere. But in the meantime, over the next 30 years, we need to cut emissions, right? Like that's the biggest thing we can do. But at least it's like carbon credits idea or carbon offsets, this buyback thing that you're talking about, right? And the concept there is that if I plant enough trees, you know, if I save enough natural environment that can automatically retain carbon out of the atmosphere, just as like photosynthesis, right? That's what you're doing. You're taking carbon out and putting oxygen, or taking carbon out of the atmosphere, putting oxygen into it, right? So we're saying that all these forests, all these mangroves, all these coral reefs are doing the job of pulling carbon out of the atmosphere naturally, right? And that's what's kept our climate in balance for so long. And that's why, you know, human-made climate change is such a disaster, right? Because we've thrown the planet out of equilibrium in terms of the amount of carbon that's in the atmosphere, right? And I say carbon, and I'm going to use that a lot, but greenhouse gases like is the more accurate term, and it covers things other than carbon.
So
methane. Kind of like, these are like climate warming gases.
So a lot of these companies are saying, kind of like me, where it's like, I don't have to cook. I don't have to take, with my girlfriend, right? I don't have to pick up after myself. I can ignore her all day. And then I just, you know, buy her an amazing dinner at the end of the day. I just do I do a bunch of positive things. And that will just like offset all the horrible shit that I did all fucking day.
Yeah.
So wait, so is it a vibe where like a company will like literally plant trees, or they like hire a company over here, or they give money towards like a
organization? Toto Wolf is physically planting the trees.
Yeah. So, and I don't want to get too sidetracked on this because we're going to see some other terms and we're going to see how this plays into Formula One. So I don't want to get too sidebar, but like how does like a company go about doing this in a typical manner?
100%. So there are these carbon offset companies. They're these third parties, these companies that will basically say, hey, you pay us money and we'll either plant some trees for you, or we'll protect a forest that's like imminently about to be cut down. And I would just shout out, like, John Oliver has an awesome episode on carbon offsets. I'd recommend, if anyone's interested, go watch it. Like he dives into how it's created just like a false understanding. You've commoditized nature in a way that does not incentivize actually changing your behavior, right? So we can just build our way out. We can build enough trees. You know, we can save enough trees and we'll be fine.
And is that, okay, so in theory, is there merit to that? Or is this kind of like, is that a shame? Like,
there's not enough land for it.
There's just not enough.
There's not enough land for it. Right. And it takes too long for these trees to grow. Am I wrong, Muhammad?
So you're looking at trees, right? We look at the rings of a tree. It's going to take decades for these things to grow and reach maturity, which they can pull carbon out of the atmosphere. But also, it's like we've created a false understanding, right? We're saying that like, if I'm protecting these trees, then I'm making a positive impact on the environment. But the framing should be just don't cut down the trees in the first place. No one cut any trees down. Let's not like do things.
Unless
it'd be a shame if something happened to this fucking tree.
Yes, but I say that this is very true unless they are in front of the Bellagio in preparation for the race in Las Vegas. Because guess what? Those trees, they're going back up.
Yeah.
Okay? They're going back up.
Wait, yeah. No, yeah, that definitely. And the Bellagio fountain is like a big carbon sink. It does a lot.
So you get a carbon offset for just for like saving a tree that was
more. Yeah, but then you dive it, John. Yeah.
So it's like the Green Mile red telephone comes in and it's like you've gotten a reprieve. It's not even a new tree planted. It's a tree.
And
not
get, what do you think happens, right? Is that they claim trees that are about to get killed that were in no danger of getting killed. That are like already preserved land, right? Or on national parks, right? Like, right. So then they're like, they're literally not doing anything, right? And I'm not saying, I'm not familiar with what the proportion is in a lot of these companies of what they're planting or what they're whatever. But it's a very easily exploitable thing.
So what are some other,
all right, so kill that one.
Yeah.
We got that one.
So you got carbon offsets, you got net zero. The other one, greenhouse gases, we covered. It's like carbon is the big one, but methane, like you mentioned. And then also there's like other smaller ones that are just like pack more of a punch, you can say. But carbon is by far the most used and the most abundant.
I want to ask about methane for a second.
Go for it.
Okay, because this is something... First of all, Muhammad, do you eat meat?
I do.
Okay, so you really have no leg to stand on here because you personally are contributing
100%.
A great deal. You're a huge. Do you fly?
I do fly. Yeah, and that's the thing is, yeah, you, nobody's perfect, man.
And you have lights. Do I see fucking lights on in your fucking house?
It's crazy.
Yeah. All these things. It's crazy how you could sit here in your lit house with your belly full of meat. Coming at Formula One.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, I think there's something that these companies use is that they hit us with like that it's all about individual responsibility, right?
Yeah, and that's a really big part of it, right? Like 100 companies in the world are responsible for 70% of the greenhouse gas emissions that are happening. Now, the idea of a carbon footprint was created by BP in the early 2000s in order to convince people that they had a personal responsibility to the climate crisis, right? And, you know, oil companies knew back in the 70s that like burning excessive fossil fuels was going to lead to global warming. And, you know, you line all those things up for sure. It's like we need to like control those companies. But again, I'm not going to say there's not an aspect of personal responsibility because in the end, you can choose where to spend your money. Whoa. You know, like,
wait, hold on one second. I can eat all the meat that I want. Correct.
Sure.
Relative. But the whole cowspiracy thing.
Yeah.
Because people were out there saying that the cows were the worst things.
Well, they're not great
for global warming.
They're like, and the reason, but
the
like
cows are bad.
But you also have to think about why they're bad, right? So yes, they release methane, but they're the reason that they've become so bad in recent years is because of these consolidated animal feedstock operations where we bring a bunch of cows into one place. We like pollute the water and soil with all their waste, but then you just have concentrated an entire area of methane forming, right? And like in the end, we're wasting so much food, right? We're wasting all this meat that like doesn't need to be made in the first place, right? And like, yes, you can eat all the meat you want, but there is something to be said for how that meat is made, how that meat is farmed, how that meat is processed, how that meat is like divvied up and like costed out, right? How it's transported, you know, all those things, right? So that's why people are so obsessed with like shopping local, right? Like sustainable farming practices, those things, because those will have an impact, right? So like, yes, your consumption is a smaller than a drop in the bucket, but
the
your behavior is influencing.
Is worse than a car.
Well, but also they only have impact as far as they like hurt the, because there's the machine that's going, right? There's like the machine of like the mass production of all this stuff in terms of like, you know, I guess here's an interesting thing, right? And now we're going to get into cars. And this is a different thing apart from methane, but it speaks to this. It's like, now there's this new, it's like electric cars seem to be like the wave of the future. Like everyone's kind of hop on the electric car bandwagon. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that, but then I also think it's, you know, you can shop local. That's great. But like until there's a large demand that actually like hurts the pockets of like the mass production of meat that's not like shopping local. You can just shop local and you can like feel good about yourself, but that's not necessarily like affecting.
Totally.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I completely agree.
You can save your toilet paper, great, as an individual,
yeah,
and be like, I don't waste my paper.
Well, that's
but they're still mass producing toilet
paper. For sure.
The F1 of this whole, that's this whole question is like, there's a continuum of like individual responsibility versus like systemic.
Yeah, but again,
everybody lives on this whole
yeah,
thing.
You can think of yourself as an individual for sure. And I think that like that framing works, right? And that's why like when you talk about climate policy, it's so important to look at where like the big hitters are and where the main points of regulation are, right? Like how can we adjust the way the market works? How can we adjust the way the system works? How can we address systemic issues to clean up the supply chain, to clean up how we do it, right? And I'll tie it to why F1 has a possibility to do this is because F1 is very far reaching, right? And like, if you think about the way things work, there's like a ton of suppliers, there's a ton of factories, there's a ton of events, everything that goes into it, right? And something that's sort of a lot of companies that are trying to like say they're doing a good job on this are saying that they're cleaning up their supply chains. They're making up clean supply chain pledges, right? And what that means is they're doing everything they can to like work with their suppliers downstream to create like a better world for everyone, right? And it's because they have the power because they're the main purchaser of it, right?
So F1 is doing this, you're saying.
Well, I'm saying F1, this is what someone in F1's position could do if they leveraged all their power, right?
Okay.
F1 is saying that they will work with their suppliers. That's great. They've made some other commitments. I think that like, in general, though, it's like an aspirational thing, right? Like F1 actually does have the potential to make a really big impact if they make really strong efforts to clean up every part of the series, right?
Okay, so let's,
well, let's talk about what they've claimed that they're going to do.
So let's talk about what they've said they're going to do. You hear carbon neutral or net zero by 2030.
Mm-hmm.
Like what's their plan as of now towards doing that, and what do you feel like there could be like
what's your assessment of that?
Exactly.
And how would you improve or no notes?
100%.
No notes.
So definitely notes. But I think that like, so one thing that's important, another just term to phrase all this in is life cycle emissions, right? Like, and I was sort of getting to that with that supply chain thing, right?
Yes,
we have to think about the carbon intensity of a product or a service in the context of everything that's put into it, right? Because that's the only way that we're going to really truly attack like the carbon crisis is by looking at every stage of production and manufacturing and delivery and eventual consumption, right? So I think that's really important context to dive into this. But what F1 is doing,
so for example, not just like the car on the track, but like the energy that it puts to get the car to the track,
exactly,
and it puts to build the carbon that the car is made out of.
Yeah, where
exactly.
Was the chassis made? What went into make what you, materials went into making the chassis?
Yeah.
Where was it made? Then where was it delivered? And all everything that goes into
right.
it. And then where does it end up?
Too? Yeah,
yeah. I mean, to quote you, Brian. Yeah.
Right.
No, I think you're right on. Okay. You're right on there. Okay. There so exactly. So F1 has this net zero by 2030 goal. You know, I think it's a great goal, but let's talk about what it is. They've balanced it out into four separate areas that they're going to look to improve their operations and their material usage and their overall carbon intensity. One is on the track, right? So that's the hybrid power units. They're saying fueled by biofuels is what they've called it. The next one is on the move is what they call it. They say it's logistics and travel efficiency, right? So getting people from race to race. Where we work, right? They're talking about their facilities, venues and factories, right? And then they're balanced to zero. And this is the carbon offset thing we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
They're saying credible biological and breakthrough technical action for sequestration. So that means that one of their four pillars is to pull carbon out of the atmosphere a ton, you know?
Okay.
So, and then one more thing is the emissions breakdown, just so you all know, and I think you've already potentially caught on to this, is that their power unit emissions...
Wait, sequestration is one of their plans?
Sequestration is one of their plans, but that's a plan of a lot of people, right? It's this idea that like we can actually just like pull carbon out and bury it underground, or we can do something with it. And sequestration can also mean trees, right? It can also mean like carbon sinks, like forests, right? You're sequestering carbon in plants and stuff like that. So,
sorry, wait, you could pull carbon out of the air and then bury it in the ground?
Yeah. So that's
people are thinking about doing that.
No, they do. It's a big oil and gas thing, right? They call it carbon capture and sequestration, CCS, where they're basically saying, we're going to burn this gas out of this pipe, like smokestack, but we're going to prevent it from coming out using a bunch of like emissions technology, and then we're going to take that like carbon, put it in a pipeline, and go bury it somewhere that's flat, you know,
like,
so like in
throw
the
it in the fucking like bury it in the earth like, yeah, Megatron,
exactly,
like it's like a bad guy.
And what does that do to the, does that fuck up the earth, does it fuck up the soil?
We'll find out.
Yeah, I think I'm not super versed on the subject, but that's the basic concept.
Okay.
So then the emissions breakdown, right? So only 0.7% of what F1 has calculated as their emissions. Now, they're not exactly clear on how deep in the life cycle they're looking, right? Like, I couldn't find the like their methodology that they used, which like goes a lot to like, you know, maybe squint a little bit at these numbers. But 0.7% is their power unit, so a really small amount. 7.3% is their event operations. 45% is logistics. 19% is facilities and factories. And then 27% is business travel. So nearly a third is business travel. Almost half is logistics. And the rest of it is made up of like venues and then the power unit.
Right, because it seems like the actual cars, how much those actual cars like are going to emit versus the like whole circus and all of the planes, trains and automobiles that like it takes to actually like move this thing mm-hmm. around. Them actually driving around on the track seems like,
yeah,
it's like the least impactful, like in terms of actual literal negative.
True.
Yeah.
True. But
yes.
The fuel that they put in that 0.7% of the car for that half a second, for that one smidge.
Yeah.
That's the whole game, right?
Yeah. So that's a big part of their pitch. And this is like, when you look at their overall plan, something they talk a lot about is creating a new, what they're calling a drop-in fuel, which I'm understanding is just something that anyone can use, right? Like any car or whatever. It's like gasoline. That
that's the future of automotive.
So
that's the future. Like that's what Aramco and Shell and all these companies are interested in, is like what we are going to power our cars with in the future.
That is potentially like less harmful to the environment. They're trying to power these cars with a type of fuel that is going to ultimately potentially be in road cars that will be not less harmful for the environment.
Yeah. And let me make F1's case, right? Like, so if I were F1, I would say transportation is, at least in the U.S., is the largest source of emissions in the U.S. It's the second largest globally. The vast majority of those emissions, at least in the U.S., are made by passenger vehicles, right? Yeah. If we can create a fuel that is completely carbon negative or carbon neutral, like net zero, then we can theoretically make internal combustion engines, like cars, still last and everything be great. And we don't have to like really switch to EVs or change anything because we have created this net zero, quote unquote, fuel that everyone can use. And then we can use it in passenger cars, and then we can make a new one. We can put it in trucks, and then we can make a new one, put it in airplanes, and we can make a new one. You put it in ships, you know? And it's like, so that is like one of the main like things that you see in their strategic plans, is this idea of like they are going to create the fuel of the future, right? To replace gasoline, and it's going to be net zero, right?
What do we think of that? What do we think of the new gas?
So right now, nothing.
What do we think of Aramco's new gas?
Yeah. So right now, they haven't made it yet. I mean, at least from what I've seen, I'm sure they're working on it. But right now, there is no current scalable technology that meets that criteria. There's no one has accomplished something that is like able to be mass produced at low cost and low energy intensity, and is fully net zero, right? And I can walk you through what the different biofuels are and why they actually have resulted in sometimes more negative consequences for the environment, and how we're going back to this idea of like accounting, carbon accounting, right? And the benefits are maybe not as all they're cracked out to be. But that's sort of one of the main pushes that we're seeing as part of their strategic plans going into this net zero phase.
I see. So F1, the organization, is working on that. Maybe are they working with the teams? What do you feel like what's... Okay.
Yeah, they say they're working with Aramco and fuel suppliers and like their technology teams to create this drop-in fuel.
Okay. Okay.
Gotcha.
So Aramco, I did a little bit of research. Turns out they're actually the biggest polluter.
Yeah, Aramco is
4%
of all global emissions
since 1967. I looked that up.
That is one company. They're the largest company in the world. They're the largest oil producer in the world and gas producer. And yeah, like I said, they're a huge, huge carbon emitter. And they have everything to lose from decarbonizing, that is like, and they're the title sponsor of F1, right?
So how do we feel about this partnership and how good a faith effort? Do we feel like this is going to be, this is like, this, does this feel like the wolf in the hen house a little bit to
yeah,
you, Mohammed?
It does. It does. And it's really just because of the title sponsor nature of it, right? And it goes to show like, why then you can read into that, right? You can say, okay, what's the title sponsor's primary goal going into the next 20 years? It's actually to like expand oil production in a lot of ways, right? Like we just finished COP28, right? This, the UN climate talks. There was a huge fight between climate activists and oil and gas companies, which showed up in force. The president of COP is an oil and gas executive. So, you know, let's just applaud the UN for its impartiality. And then we go and they argued well enough, and there are no phase outs currently in the international climate plans for oil and gas, only for coal at the moment, at least was what I saw. So
wait, so the idea is that this fuel will not use any oil or gas.
Well,
like that's the idea.
No, they're saying it's, I mean, like, so the way these fuels work is that there's none of them that don't use oil, right? Like they're all blended in some way. What they do is they take like,
they use oil.
Yeah. Exactly.
You gotta have oil.
Well, I know, but like, but
Aramco is not gonna pitch an oil-free oil.
I understand.
Oil.
What I'm saying is, like, is there a world where this, like, them making this thing isn't detrimental to Aramco's business? Like, no. Like all of a sudden, if every car, like, would there still be a thing where like Aramco would benefit from this? Like, you know, is it? I'm pushing back. I'm like, well, of course they're not gonna like really create this thing that they keep saying they're going to make because it's Aramco. Is there a world where it's potentially profitable where Aramco could still use its production in a way that is not harmful to the environment?
Yes, in an ideal world. In an ideal world, for sure.
Okay, so
that'd be
so
great.
What could a non-evil move be by Aramco here? What would a non-prop... Because from my understanding is the move that oil companies are doing now is they're doing the ethanol, like they're cutting it up.
Yeah. Yes.
What's the ethanol is the new
It's not the pure cocaine.
It's cut with other shit now.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not fentanyl.
It's not fentanyl.
Yeah.
It's just crude oil. No. What a like first generation biofuels like ethanol, right, is basically you grow a bunch of corn, you then blend it, you like pulp it down and then you blend it with gas or a certain blend of fuel. And then all of a sudden it's more fuel efficient. It's more friendly for the environment. But what we can learn lessons from what's happened, right? So with ethanol production, what you've actually seen is that it's resulted in some pretty poor outcomes for soil quality and water quality, right? You're using a lot of pesticides.
It burns cleaner, right?
It technically burns cleaner. Yes, it has a lower carbon intensity, but a lot of the benefits of that, the accounting that they use is also included in what they're saying is this corn is growing, so it's automatically storing carbon. So I'm then burning it. And the carbon it's releasing into the atmosphere is offset by the carbon that it sequestered initially, right? But again, remember what I said earlier, like, just don't burn it at all, right? Like, just leave it be. Let it do its job as a carbon sink, right? And that's where a lot of this accounting comes in. So yes, it burns slightly cleaner when you're actually, like, lighting it on fire, for sure. And there are definitely certain, like, greenhouse gas pollutants and others that are mitigated. But overall, like you're still creating a fuel that you're burning, right? And in the end, that's putting carbon into the atmosphere.
And you're fucking, and you're like now creating way more land for
right
and food and...
Exactly. So that's a huge part of it, right? So like in Illinois, where I live, like over a third of the arable land that's being used is being used for corn that's going to be sold for ethanol, right? There's like a huge amount of land that's being used for ethanol and not fuel or like biofuels and not food. And if we were to like, and this is why I said scalable earlier, if we were to create a biofuel with current technology that is able to fit every, like cover all of the costs of gasoline currently, it would need to take up every possible piece of arable land in the world. Like, and we wouldn't be able to eat food. Like, it's like we would have to take every, there's not enough land to be able to actually offset it in the way that they would like to say it can.
Meaning, so, like, it would, you'd have to replace, like,
you'd have to replace everything you're growing.
Right. Yes.
With something that you're inevitably going to mix and burn.
Right.
So basically, I'm just skeptical of this Aramco deal, and that the idea that Aramco is going to lead the way in this, because I mean, yes, if you look at if you want to get caught up in the weeds of F1's footprint, uh-huh, right, of how they can, like, as a corporate entity, how they can lower their footprint. I mean, they just got to change their race schedule, right?
Right.
It's, yeah, like
bullshit. They should, you know, hit all their Middle East races, hit all their European races, hit all their, you know, but they'll never do that, right? They're not going to ever do, you know, Vegas, Miami, then Austin, right?
Yeah.
That would just completely kill them. Right.
But yeah.
I mean, well, it wouldn't. I don't know. I feel like it's like that because it, in terms of their, exactly, like their literally F1's impact, like them as a company.
Yeah.
What their carbon footprint is, as you say, like
they would treat themselves like a rock tour.
Right.
They would just go from place to place,
which
in a non-stupid way.
I don't think that's necessarily like a bad idea. I mean, I understand why they don't do it. It's profit. It's like, it's, you know, they have their individual contracts with all these individual places. Yeah. And they're like, well, we want it then. Okay, we'll go to, you know,
Saudi Arabia, yeah, and then we'll go
to Mexico.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we'll go, you know,
back, like, we'll go to Bahrain at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to, and then we'll go back, and then we'll go all the way to the North America, and then we'll go back to the Middle East at the end of the year.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And you throw Melbourne in there and Miami back to back, right? Like, right. Yeah, it provides, I will say, it provides the most opportunity for decarbonization is if they can improve their travel and logistics schedule, right? And you know, then it just also makes transport easier and cheaper, and you spend less money and you reduce the overall life cycle of your emissions because every part of what you're doing is just taking less energy overall, right? And that can have a huge impact.
But I guess me personally, I don't care as much about that as like what they can do as like thought leaders.
Yeah, exactly. And
for transportation.
Yes. And their claims that they're making are, I see where they're coming from, right? Like F1 as an innovation series has the potential to like create new good technology that can be scaled and everyone will use, and it'll make everything better and more fuel efficient and batteries last longer and all those things. And I think they can and should do that. And I think they are going to try to do that, right? Now with like the drop in fuel, I'm skeptical because like that's, you know, that's like a hard, that like nothing really exists at that scale right now, something that can be ported everywhere, right? So, but like overall, I think they have an opportunity to really help the world potentially, but like, let's also just, you know, keep our expectations in check a little bit.
So there's, I guess that's the type of thing, like even if they do invent this fuel, even if they do, like, over the next, by 2030,
this non-fuel fuel,
come up with a fuel, this non-fuel fuel, what you're saying is to get that to be actually scalable so that you can get that in at your Shell gas station when you go there, the actual, like, mechanisms to making that possible are, like, not even really feasible.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe they know a lot more than I do, right? But, like, from what I've seen, it's not real. Nothing has achieved that, right? Like, it's really hard to do. Ethanol has been around for decades, and it's still the majority market is North America, right? And that's because we grow the most corn for the most part. So it's like,
okay. So what's your? I just made you king of Formula One.
Yeah.
Oh, well, before we get to that, what about this fucking crypto thing?
Yeah, it's
how they the nets they're taking money from the two big, like, Mordor and Voldemort. Like they're trying to be carbon footprint, and they're shaking hands with Voldemort and Satan.
In
Aramco and crypto,
and crypto's and correct, crypto's bad for the environment because the servers that it takes to like keep the blockchain, like
we don't, it's as bad as literal mining used to be. Except there's no fucking cave-ins and none of these guys die.
Because it requires,
unfortunately.
It requires so much energy to keep the like information, because
to keep these servers running.
It requires so much energy just to keep the servers running that it's like actually worse for the environment than anything else.
Yes.
It's just using up so much energy.
How bad is crypto for the environment?
The thing that I found was that for every $1 in Bitcoin market value that's created, if you use like a social cost of carbon, 35 cents in global climate damages occur. So a third of every dollar that's made is bad, you know? So like, yeah, it's not great. And again, like crypto.com, Facebook, like, or Meta, a lot of these tech companies are just using carbon offsets, right? Like ad nauseum to just like make sure that they can say they're carbon neutral. Also on Satan and Voldemort, Stefano Domenicali, fuck, marry, kill.
this is why he's on the pod.
Definitely fucking Voldemort.
Yeah, what that nose do.
Voldemort can kind of get it.
Voldemort can kind of get it.
Why he kind of, that's, there's like a new like TikTok comment that's like when you see someone who's just like not traditionally attractive, and but there's something about them.
Yeah, no, Voldemort,
so the,
kinda...
so then the comments are all, why he kind of why Voldemort kind of nice though. I fuck Mordor just to kind of, you know, one pump chump.
Do you fuck the eye?
I fuck the eye.
You fuck that.
Just
fuck
go
that
out in a blaze of glory.
And at least someone's watching you. You can't turn the lights off there.
Kill Satan. How about you?
Yeah, I would fuck Stefano though for like the paddock passes and like, whatever could come with that. And then, kill Sauron, Mordor, and then, yeah, marry Satan, obviously. But yeah, so I think like, yeah, these corporations, right? It's very much like, yes, you have a great plan. We love that you're going to try to do this, but like also who are you working with to do it and what's their track record, you know?
Right.
Because, I mean, the Aramco, I mean, they've been notorious for tanking all of these deals. In Copenhagen, I think it was, and
yeah, and also like right recently, like this year in the UAE, in the UAE,
they haven't been good faith partners. Now here's a question. Right. Here's another question. A lot of this corporate, like, we're gonna be net zero. Look at us. Look how well we're doing. I feel like I could be wrong. Is it a lot of it like, don't worry about us, government. We got it. Do not step in. When you have a global, because I know that, like, I mean, China's meeting its Paris has been, you know, the United States is like, Paris?
They're doing better than we are.
Paris? What's Paris? We don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. Never heard of her.
Paris, Texas.
Exactly. China's been honoring they've been trying to honor their agreement, and certain governments have intermittently been trying to institute efforts to reach the 1.5 whatever the fuck now degrees. At what point does a government step in and say enough of this?
Like 20 years ago, but like
and like never, right? And
I mean, is there never a world where a government regulates any of these industries?
No, that's literally my job is to convince government that they should regulate these industries. And they do, right? And there are certain governments that do. In America, it's done much more at a state level than a federal level. But like, yeah, people are trying. And that is providing
F1?
Pretty significant solutions.
Who would F1 fall under?
Okay.
I international waters. Like, it's like, you know.
Anything goes here, baby girl.
Anything goes.
I wonder where the organization, like where F1 is like, you know, it's like Red Flags has like a place where we're from, like
yes,
a corporate
yeah, exactly.
address.
Panama.
Well, exactly. Like, what government would decide to be like, okay, you are creating this much? Because
but is F1 even like on a radar when it comes to that? Like, are there much bigger? I mean, you would think, but F1. It's the traveling circus.
But it's a locus of all these fucking evildoers, right? It's all the car manufacturers and all the oil producers. They're all like fucking in this one place. It's right. The eyes wide shut right here. So if I'm the government, if I'm a government.
ESA says F1 headquarters are in London.
There you go.
ESA.
There you go.
Yes.
But it's owned by Liberty. Yeah. F1 headquarters are
right, but now they're owned by Liberty Media, but I think that the company still probably has.
Who the fuck knows? So yeah, this Eyes Wide Shut thing happening between the suppliers of the oil, the makers of the cars. You know.
I mean, it's not unique to F1, right? There's a real challenge in regulating global companies, which is why that are like have supply chains that exist across like all continents and like things that happen everywhere. Like that's why these international climate talks are so important, right? Because if you can get countries to all agree on targets and then regulate them for their unique circumstances in a way that inevitably reaches carbon zero, you know, zero emissions, then that's the inevitable goal there, right? But like it's very challenging.
Right. Well, I saw a commercial like literally today, and it was a Honda commercial, and it was like net zero by 2050. And it was like Honda's going for net zero by 2050.
So that's a more achievable goal.
Right.
And by what? But,
and, well, yeah. Like how does that like, yeah.
How, well, yeah. It's it. How much are you buying trees that don't need protecting, you know? And like there's a lot of issues with that. I mean, the carbon offsets thing has resulted in like some really poor outcomes in some places. Like they've like displaced people because they wanted to like build a forest or something like that. And then, you know, farmers are like, wait, what happened? So like, in essence, the key is just cut emissions as quick as you can. And as fast, like, you know, right now, global emissions are climbing. They have yet to peak and start to go down. We're still going up.
Mom,
you know?
I have a great idea. What if we bring back COVID?
Yeah, wasn't COVID like the best COVID thing like that ever awesome happened for the environment for us in the last 50 years?
It did a bit like in the very short term, like over a couple months time span, but the post COVID effects on climate emissions are harrowing. You know, we've seen emissions spark like a lot because
so
everyone
like trying to make up for it.
Yeah, everyone was just trying to get out there.
Carbon buybacks.
Yeah.
I gotta go to Vegas, baby. Yeah, yeah. I was in my house for a year. Yeah. I'm going to Portugal. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait.
I'm going to Lisbon.
So got Gen Z intern editing this.
Right.
She's, you know.
Yes.
Give her some fucking hope.
It's right.
Totally.
So depressing.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's just been so depressing.
What can be done?
Well, a lot can be done, like right now. Like we can do a lot to cut carbon emissions. We need to start using more renewable energy. We need to stop emitting so many tailpipe pollutants and find decarbonization pathways that are like work and are scalable, which do exist, right? Like some people estimate that we can decarbonize 80% of the economy now, right? We have done not even a fraction of that, right? And
how do you decarbonize?
So
I from what I've heard is we are carbon. How can I decarbonize myself?
Stop breathing. I think that so there's this idea, right? Like it's
so Wim Hof is bad for the environment.
Wim Hof is bad. Yeah. Wim Hof is bad for the environment.
It's not just corp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You may as well shoot a polar bear every time you do Wim Hof.
That's what he wanted to do.
Yeah. No, so there are a lot of things that we can't do, right? We can stop burning coal. We can stop burning oil. We can replace those with renewable energy sources and how we power our grid. We can use energy-efficient technology to power our homes and our buildings. We can...
Like what energy? Like, give me an example.
Like, I mean, I'm not an energy efficiency expert, but there's a lot of things. Like, our grid in the U.S. is very old, right? We can update it with modern technology that better, like, regulates how much we're using. We can, like, a lot
bring
of our homes...
better.
Yeah. Build back better is maybe what you're thinking of.
Build back better.
Build back better.
Just, hey, it still rolls off the top.
Build back better.
So like we can do things now to do that. And then on the transportation side, right? Like passenger vehicles are the largest source of emissions. A lot of them are very electrifiable at the moment. And especially when we look over the next 10 to 15 years, we can do a lot to switch to electric vehicles, but also do all the things around it, right? And at the same time, we can do a lot to like create a less car-centric society, right? We can like build more transit, we can build more walking, more biking, bring people closer together.
That's never going to happen in LA, Maha.
Yeah, no, I, yeah. Oh, well, God.
You ever rode the bus in LA? You feel like a bum.
Yeah, I've.
You feel like a literal
wanted
bum
to throw up. I like, well, just because I get nauseous on buses, but that's a different thing.
Wow, wow. Guy who gets nauseous on buses wanting to put more buses.
Talking about other people.
Wait, but okay, so this is, I guess, whenever these conversations happen, I think the thing that happens, or the hold up, is like, at what point do these things feel like they're implementable? Like can you implement them now and there won't be that much of a shakeup to like the everyday life, versus like a more like overhauling, you know, like, as it's hard to put the canary back in the coal mine.
Yeah.
Whatever. What is it?
It's hard to put the cat back in the bag.
What is that term? It's like, once it's out, you can't put it back in.
The cat's out of the bag.
Like, when it comes to,
from what I understand,
like cars being the dominant form of transformation in the United States.
Definitely.
It's going to be really difficult to like turn that boat around.
For sure.
Like, and now we're going to like a national rail grid. Like, you could take the train.
Yeah, we'll just be Holland.
Obviously,
that's difficult. I think the interesting thing is the electric cars. That's very interesting. But then I've also heard all this stuff about how like those are, that the mining that it takes to like make those batteries and also our phones is also fucking horrible and ruining people's lives elsewhere as
Those people just suck.
Right.
It's like, what are you just gonna just find things about everything?
Well, yeah, but there's like really big issues with the supply chain and child slavery and like really poor outcomes in mining communities.
There's some really crazy shit happening when it comes to that.
Wait, can we just sit down for a second? Tesla, good or bad?
Tesla, more people driving electric vehicles is good for the environment. Like, but remember, Brian, what you were talking about earlier, right? Like, it's life cycle emissions, right? We have to look at everything we're doing across the thing and work to decarbonize every part of it. I think that Tesla, you know, I have complicated feelings about it because I'm not a big Elon Musk fan, but you know, it's done a good job of creating a market for electric vehicles and showing that this like technology can be used at scale and we don't need to change much, right? But in the end, right, Brian, like no one's asking for change overnight. We do need to do a lot and we do need to do it rapidly, right? But like, if we have to, inevitably we're going to need to live in a society that doesn't emit carbon anymore. And we need to like live in a place that does everything it can to be as least carbon intensive as possible. That means some structural changes. You can think about it in the context of a long-term change. But like, even if you steer the ship 5% now, we might end up in a very different place in 30 years, right? And that has the potential to make a really big impact in the long term. So you have to be thinking at that scale, but also we have to cut emissions very quickly. And there are things that we can do that, right? We can stop burning oil. We can stop burning gas. We can like use cars. Like, we can use electric vehicles. We can transition other parts of the economy. Matt, what you were saying about like, you know, one of you were saying about like building a national rail network and all those things, right? I think in that way, it's a lot like the way we travel, like if we get into the way you do everyday travel, like there are aspects of your behavior that you could change that would reduce that, right? But in the end, what it's going to take is that 5% now. Let's change how we're building infrastructure. Let's start to right now plan for the next 30 years of how we're building out things and begin to build more, you know, pedestrian friendly things. Start to zone in a way that like favors decarbonized modes of transportation. And then inevitably people's behavior will change over scales, right? Like we made the switch from horse-drawn carriages to vehicles like so quickly, right? Like over like a decade. And like we can do the same thing now, right?
So you're saying Lime scooters are a good thing.
Yeah, it's funny. My roommate works for Lime. I can't talk shit right now. He'll hear me. No, Lime scooters are a good thing, right? Like, because theoretically what you're doing is you're avoiding a car trip, and that's not gas burned and emitted into the atmosphere. That's good. Now, we can talk about all the ways they're misused and the bad things they do for maybe safety and those other things, but from a purely carbon perspective, every time you don't use your car and you use another way to get around, it's good. Now, I'm not telling you to stop using your car. Don't come for me. Do whatever you want to do with your car. But like, you know, we're going to need to make some structural changes to really be able to hit these goals.
So has like the work from home, now that everyone's working from home, like post-COVID, has that like, I mean, it's probably like affected in other ways, but people commuting to and from work has probably gone down a fairly significant amount in the last like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
There's, you know, like...
Why did I think that most of carbon emissions was heating, just energy, just powering things, keeping the lights on?
Yeah, that does cause a lot. Buildings are like one of the largest sources of carbon emissions, but transportation in the U.S. is the largest.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So going back into Formula One within like would, because as you kind of are seeing it, this like this drop in, you know, new fuel seems like it might be just like a feather in their cap and won't necessarily have like an actual real world impact. Would, because it seems like if you're going to be the innovator of the space, if you're going to be like, this is the innovator of the space, you know, we go first and then it trickles down into like your, you know, Honda Civic. But first it starts on track with Max Verstappen. Is electric, like is it turning into Formula E? Like, is that the move down the line? Because is there a way where there's, you know, as, because it's more and more companies are doing this. Like Ford's has their new electric car coming out. Like every car, at one point it was only Prius. Like when the Prius came out, right? That was like, holy shit. And it was the only one.
And it was lame.
And now it's like, and Elon Musk is like doing his best to be like, look at my cool truck, guys. And it's like,
all right. Great Elon impression.
For sure, King.
And he's hitting it with a
look,
fucking.
Look, Joe Rogan shot a fucking, like, a crossbow at it. Isn't it cool, guys? Like, that's the vibe.
Go fuck yourself.
you're gonna blackmail me with money?
Go fuck yourself.
You know? Go off, King. But like, it's now economically viable, and it's now prudent for these companies to, in order to like keep up, they have to have their own electric vehicles.
Yeah.
Now it's like mainstream, which I think you would probably say, despite even though it has like those cars have, you know, their own shortcomings. You would say that as a net positive, right?
Yeah, the life cycle emissions of an EV are lower than the life cycle emissions of a regular vehicle. Same size, same, like, everything.
Yeah, you were singing Elon's praises. Go ahead.
I was saying that I would never say that I was singing Elon's praises, but I would say that Tesla and all those wonderful engineers who are unsung heroes have done a great job.
He built that shit himself.
Yeah, with his own two hands.
He walked the floor.
He did it in his garage.
He slept. Sometimes he would sleep on the floor.
Wow.
To get them to meet those quotas.
Good for him. So look, like EVs, yeah, overall net positive for the environment. Happy with them.
Yeah.
I think when Brian, to your question earlier, being like, yeah, will F1 inevitably become Formula E? I think that their intention is not to do that. Like, if you listen in press conferences and stuff, especially like earlier in the year, Christian was like, I think the internal combustion engine is going to live forever. You know what I mean? And like, they were talking about how they're going to find the sustainable fuel that can like do all the things and keep the internal combustion engine alive. So, and also Formula E has a license on it, I think, until like the late 2030s. So nothing anytime soon. But what Formula One can and is doing, which I admire and I think is a good step forward, is that they've changed their engine regulations for 2026. And what they've done is they've increased the battery size. They've changed their like calculations for how you measure the efficiency of the engine and made it so that like within the regulations, the engines they make have to be more efficient and use overall less energy while still providing the same amount of power, right? And that's really where the value of like a series like F1 can come in. They're building these really complex mechanical engineering type pieces, right? And if they can find certain things or innovate on certain aspects that create really high level efficiencies, then we can just use less overall, right? Like in the end, a Formula One engine is running at like a 50% thermal efficiency. A road car is at like 19%, right? They're using a much more efficient engine. Now, an F1 car uses about like 6 miles a gallon of gas. But like in the same vein, if you can port that over to performance vehicles, to normal road cars, to fix like to improve on the hybrid systems like they've done over the past several years, it can have really big impacts. So even if the fuel isn't as great as we want it to be, especially in the short term, give them enough time, there's the potential to make a really big difference. And I think it's we can only judge them off of what they're planning to do and then look back afterwards.
But that's not, but if we do that, we might be too late. We might be underwater by that time.
Definitely.
Be like, oh, they didn't nail that one. They didn't nail that engine reg.
Yeah. There's an aspect
they
of...
We can't afford to total wolf this one. Our lives are in the balance.
Yeah, I would not have Toto running the global climate talks and ideas.
Just have them write a letter.
Yeah.
When we're under fucking water.
We are so sorry. The planet is dying.
The world.
Luis, Come on.
You can do it.
Come on, water, stop. Go down.
Yeah. The ice caps melting is like a limiting belief.
It's like it's just your attitude.
Is it a belief that you don't have to melt?
How much water are they wasting, you know, washing their hands every time they, you know, go to the bathroom? Though, if you really want Toto to like do some good stuff for you, he's the front man, being like, "This is the, like, you have to do this."
Yeah.
And then people are like, "Yes, I do have to do that," because they'll just, you know.
But not the red flags, pod.
Not the red flags.
I feel like the reason they're not going electric is because there's no money in electric.
There's a lot of money in electric vehicles right now. They're like very, very profitable, and like they're.
Whoa, there's no money, there's no like oil money being hurled at you.
Totally, yeah.
In terms of sponsors.
Right. Yeah.
Who's going to sponsor, who's sponsoring Formula E?
Oh, I have no idea.
Fucking
Dogecoin.
The vacuum cleaner that always breaks that I have. God, the shitty vacuum, the most overhyped.
Dyson?
Yeah.
My fucking Dyson.
It's just an empty hole. And you're like,
but there is a prop. There's profit to be made in that sector. There's profit to be made. Like Ford wouldn't be coming out with their all electric.
Definitely,
other companies would be like falling into line of doing electric cars if there wasn't profit.
Oh, there's money to be made in the market. Right. But I'm saying for Formula One,
yeah,
right, for like sponsorship and for like people to get involved.
There's no daddy like Oil Daddy.
Yeah, no daddy like Oil Daddy. Oil Daddy would make the best Patreon. Subscribe to the Patreon.
the thing is they've only, Formula One has only had the most evil daddies, because the daddies that wrote the playbook
were the tobacco
alcohol and tobacco.
Yeah,
but they wrote the playbook of like, this shit isn't bad, this shit's fine,
right?
Climate change. We're not the climate's global warming. It's cold out.
Thank you for smoking.
Thank you for smoking.
This is good for your health. Yeah.
But, you know, for years there was climate denial.
Definitely.
And then, yeah.
There still is.
Right.
Definitely.
100%.
The hubris to think that we humans can change the weather. What are we, gods?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I saw that on TV recently.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's, yeah. I'm like, but there could be a electric daddy who makes it's
Musk.
Like, yeah. It's unfortunately like it's Musk.
Elon Musk is the biggest. He's electric.
If Elon Musk came into Formula One, I think we would all hate ourselves.
Oh, I would love that.
It would kind of be.
Wait
like
a minute.
The best
I would love it.
You
want to know why? Because Toto Wolff couldn't throw his dick around like he was the richest, most badass guy. That, you know what I mean? He couldn't be the genius anymore.
Yeah.
Like Toto Wolff would start speaking, and then Elon Musk would speak, and he'd have to be like, "Fuck, he's like," because by his own measure of, by his own metrics of what success is. Yeah, Elon's better.
This is also like a classic you thing where you're like, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. when you were getting mad, you were getting.
What do you mean?
It was like when in the race after Vegas, what was after Vegas? Was it Abu Dhabi? Yeah. In Abu Dhabi, when it was like, you were saying that like, you know, Carlos Sainz like crashed and it was because of the track. Like you were trying to say that like it wasn't Sainz's fault. To prove your point that Vegas was awesome, you were saying something nice about science, and you were like, "No, like, oh, this is like my catch 22. Like, if Musk was in, you're like, yes, it would make Toto look bad, but then all of a sudden you have to like then deal with Elon Musk. Then you have like another, you know, you have a new person to hate.
Mm,
yeah,
that's true.
It's like, but to me, it's like that's a perfect place for a guy like that, because I'm just like, yeah, just be here.
Yeah.
Stop doing stuff in the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Just Trump, just own a Formula One team.
Stop turning off Starlink in Ukraine and just fucking focus on racing.
Yes. I mean, I feel like I've learned some stuff today. I feel like What else do we need to know about
Formula One?
About Formula One and how it, what role it has to play? Because I think everyone in their idealized minds, if you're really thinking romantically about Formula One,
always do.
Which, like, you know, it is this thing where you think like you got, you know, y'all make the innovations and then we all get to benefit from it. And so I guess what I'm taking away from this conversation is that they're like, there still could be progress made in that department. It's not as pie in the sky. It's not as like, you know, doughy-eyed as what they're saying is possible, which is like shooting for the stars,
yeah.
Especially considering who's involved in like baking that cake. But that there's still opportunity for Formula One to be leaders in the space, to make technical, you know, innovations that can benefit everyone and can benefit the climate
definitely.
In general. Also, you know, if you're going to do that, you got to put your, if that's really going to be an initiative that you take, you have to put your money where your mouth is and adjust your schedule so that you as an organization are being as conscious of your output as possible.
Definitely.
As well.
And the tire blankets.
Right. Well,
it's like, what are we talking like, about? The tire blankets
feels like it's this, like, it's this
random,
just like, and then the tire, it's like, that's, and that's, it's interesting because that's the, like, it's things like that that become like the things that people focus on that you kind of lose the larger plot.
Definitely.
You focus on this thing that means fucking nothing. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
My dad's relationship with climate is one that's kind of interesting because in the 70s, my dad was like the only one recycling of all of his friends. Before like anyone, there weren't recycle bins. It was just the trash. Okay. You didn't get fined in San Francisco if you didn't put your food waste in the fucking one basket. Okay. It was like there was just the trash. And my dad was like super into it. He saved all of his newspapers. He would tie them up with fucking string and he would bring it to the place where you were supposed to bring it before it was cool. And then he like did a little bit of research on it and read some shit on it and was like, me doing this means fucking jack shit to like what's ultimately happening. And like, I put this thing here and then it goes into the same place anyway.
Right.
So there is like this kind of like pettifogging that can like happen within like dialogue around this space.
Definitely.
Where you kind of get shamed for eating meat or you get like, you know, I feel like we're kind of past that, but there was a whole period of time over like the last 10 years where it was like, oh, like, I guess you hate the environment because you're like doing that.
I got asked when I was in college, I was studying to be an environmental engineer. Someone sitting across from me went, how can you call yourself an environmental engineer if you're eating a burger right now? I was like,
yeah, right.
Oh, really good. There's like, but I totally hear what you're saying, right? We're losing the forest for the trees.
Right.
In reality, we're cutting down the other half of the forest. But like the idea being that like you were worrying about tire blankets, but all of your hospitalities have a diesel generator out back that you're running for 24
right.
hours, right? Like
yeah.
right. maybe don't right. do that. Yeah, and it's things like that, right? Like let's look at the big, and this is what we talked about in climate policy. It's like, what are the big hitters? Let's go for the megatons. Let's like try and like reduce as much carbon as possible, find the things that are doing the most part of it and reduce it, right? And like what F1 can do there is improve its logistics by their own admission. It's their highest carbon intensity piece of the puzzle. And like they can do a lot that can help move the needle, I think, for themselves, but also, like you said, in innovation. But in the end, I think like anyone who's interested in the topic, right, like or wants to take this conversation elsewhere, I think always remember that like you're not going to get anywhere by worrying about the single gram of carbon that like is getting lost in an entire sea of tons and tons of fossil fuels burning all the time. Right? Let's not take our eye off the ball. Like in the end, we know what the biggest things are. And in the end, we know what to do about them, at least in the next 20 years. So why don't we do it?
Subscribe to the Patreon.
Subscribe to the Patreon. Become a daddy of the pod.
This is for general admission.
Yeah.
This is for just your fucking passerby. But this is Daddy Muhammad. Thank you
so
much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It was really nice to do an episode where I learned something
yeah.
and didn't just make other people dumber. this was really great.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, and thank you for being, you know,
thank you for being our
for
father,
being a daddy.
Of course,
and, you know, we've really enjoyed, you know, we met in Chicago when we were there for the Red Bull show run, and just immediately we were like, yes, Daddy Muhammad's the shit.
Yeah.
I thought Daddy Muhammad was the shit, but now it's confirmed.
Yeah. Shout out to all the listeners. If you become a daddy and are in the comments enough, you can make friends with whoever you want to make. So just do what you need to do.
Well, you know how the, you know how this goes. Will you honor us with a goodbye, Vankas?
Oh, this is just an honor of a lifetime. Goodbye, Vankas.
Goodbye, Vankas.
Goodbye, Vankas.